more complicated than tying shoelaces, and you screw that up. I can do mind-bogglingly incredible things, except when ignorant monkeys distract me by wasting my time with moronic questions. Sorry, I just thought. Is that what you call it? Listen, Joe, he dropped the snarky tone. You have dreamed up ideas that made me question my understanding of physics, like when you suggested we protect a jump wormhole through an elder wormhole, so keep the ideas coming. But I suggest you not pat yourself on the back until I confirm your idea will work. Again, I'm sorry. I should have realized it wouldn't work. One more question, please. If we could make a jump wormhole stable and keep it open, then could the connection of a micro wormhole be sustained? That is a good question. However, it would not be necessary. Joe, if we could keep a jump wormhole open, we could use that for communication back to Earth. We wouldn't need a micro wormhole. Oh. I could feel my cheeks turning red. Duh. Damn, my brain is asleep today. There is, no way to keep a jump wormhole open? No. Remember, even elder wormholes turn on and off in this space-time. The event horizons of wormhole endpoints disturb space-time, can even create a tear in the quantum grid fabric of space-time if the wormhole is open long enough. I told you, even comparatively weak jump wormholes have a bad effect on space-time in the immediate area. All right. Damn it, then. If we ever wanted instantaneous communications, we would need to put one end of a micro wormhole into a super high-speed missile and send it to another star the long way. Crap. It could take thousands of years for a missile to get to paradise from Earth. What? No, Joe, that won't work either. What keeps micro wormholes from collapsing is me. If we sent one end of a micro wormhole away in a missile, that wormhole connection would stay open only as long as I maintain it. The first time I lose concentration, or the first time a ship jumps with me aboard, the micro wormhole would collapse. Micro wormholes are a temporary, kind of short-range technology. They are something I invented, as far as I know. Okay, actually, they're an extension of existing elder technology, but still, they are a shining example of my awesomeness. I guess they are. Hey, I added quickly. I meant that seriously. Your awesomeness is so great, most of the time we don't even notice it. For reals, homeboy? For reals. You know, part of the problem with you being an arrogant asshole is it distracts us from how incredibly beyond us you are. Ah, yes, he sighed. My awesomeness is a burden, but I bear it happily. And we thank you. That time I could not resist adding an eye roll. Joe, most of the time your ideas are an insult to the word idea, but you should keep trying, huh? Sure thing, Skippy. Because once in a while, one of my ideas is a nugget of gold. I meant more like mocking your idiotic thoughts as an endless source of amusement for me, but let's go with the gold nugget thing if you like. Asshole, I muttered under my breath. Hey, Joe, Skippy's voice whispered from the speaker of my laptop. I looked at my desktop behind the laptop display, then around me in both directions. No avatar. There was no Grand Admiral of the Fleet with his ginormously ridiculous fore-and-aft gold-braided hat. And that was a bad sign. It meant whatever Skippy wanted to talk about, it was extra serious. Oh, shit, I said to myself silently as I pressed the button to close the door of the closet I used as an office. We had enough problems to deal with already. Our dropships had gotten worn out from flying millions of miles around the Roach Motel, so we had to be extra careful during the refueling operation. That meant not going as deep into the atmosphere and not extracting as much fuel on each flight, which meant more flights were required. Hey, Skippy, what's up with your fine self? I asked in an unsteady voice. I am not so fine right now, Joe. Sorry to hear that. Is there anything I can do? You can come to my man cave so we can talk face to face, sort of. Uh-oh. Skippy never asked me to visit his beer can in the escape pod where we kept him safely strapped in. Regardless of what he said, I regularly stopped by to visit him, and I think he appreciated the gesture, although he complained about filthy monkeys contaminating his man cave. Either this was extremely serious or he was planning to screw with me. I'll be right there. The escape pod wasn't far, so I arrived quickly and ducked down to squeeze myself through the hatch that had been designed for much smaller Theranan bodies. That escape pod came with the optional claustrophobia package, which I did not like at all. Closing the hatch would have set off alarms in the CIC and brought unwanted attention to a discussion Skippy wanted to keep private, so I sat with my back to the hatch. Since the escape pod was on a dead-end passageway, no one would be walking by unless they were specifically coming to the pod. I spoke quietly.
"I'm here. What's going on?"
"Joe, we may have a big, huge, massive... You know, there aren't words to describe how big a problem this is."
"Holy shit, Skippy. What the hell is it now?"
My mind raced through every disaster scenario I could imagine. The Maxalts, or Rindaloo, or both had learned the truth about the Flying Dutchman and were coming to crush our pirate ship. Or worse, the senior species had discovered that a small group of humans were flying around the galaxy making trouble and were already at Earth to punish humanity.
"You need a little background before I can explain the problem. I was finally able to recover data from the dead AI we found on Newark. It...
goddammit, Skippy!" I glanced behind me into the passageway in case someone heard me yelling, then lowered my voice, although I wanted to scream at him.
"After all the crap we went through getting off Gobamic without you, then spending a whole freaking year looking for a stupid conduit thing to fix you and rebuild the ship you broke, and still, you go poking your nose around and...
damn! Take a chill pill, Joe. I didn't go back in that canister."
"You didn't?"
"No. Even I am capable of learning a lesson, whether I like it or not. No way am I going back in that hellhole."
"Crap. You didn't send Nagatha in there, did you?"
I thought that unlikely, as Skippy told me he had not been able to revive Nagatha yet.
"No, not Nagatha either. She saved my life, and despite her being a royal pain in my ass, I have grown rather fond of her."
His avatar popped to life atop a couch opposite me, with the avatar wagging a finger at me.
"I will deny everything if you tell her that."
Skippy thought he could keep secrets from Nagatha. I wasn't sure that was true.
"But not Nagatha, then. How did you get info out of that dead canister?"
His avatar removed its oversized hat and mimed wiping its forehead, then wearily set the hat back on, tilting it back so I could see the eyes. For the first time, the avatar sat down and bent its head, staring at its tiny shoes for a moment before Skippy spoke.
"The incident with the energy virus was unfortunate, however. It gave me an idea. As you know, I have previously sent expendable submines into the dead AI canister."
"Before, you mean? You sent them in before you tried going in there yourself?"
"Yes, and also recently. Again, chillax, Joe. Loading submines in there is a one-way process. They can't, cannot, no way pose a threat to anything outside the canister. That is a solid gold promise, Joe. The reason that I gave up on submines and went in there by myself was because I wasn't getting any useful data from them. They burned out too quickly, and they weren't able to effectively transmit their findings to me. The data was garbled. Yesterday, I decided to try something new. I upgraded a submine with the ability to create a low-grade energy virus in a dimension above this spacetime. The first three times I tried it, I wasn't able to detect the effects of the energy virus, but I had a breakthrough this morning. The energy virus is creating faint but recognizable patterns, sort of ripples in higher spacetime. The ripples form a signal, and I am able to read the data. Since that breakthrough, I have been sending a series of submines into the canister. They still burn out quickly, but now I can guide them, so each one retrieves data that is new. From this data feed, I have been able to build a very rough picture of the AI that used that canister as an anchor in local spacetime."
"Great. So, was it like you?"
"Its basic matrix was very much like me, which is troubling, because of what else I learned."
The avatar froze and flickered for a second, nearly making my heart stop. But before I could say anything, the avatar moved again.
"I would like to double-check my analysis, but I am confident there can be no mistake about it.
Joe, that AI was involved in throwing the planet Newark out of its original orbit. That elder AI wiped out an intelligent species."
"Holy shit."
That revelation completely floored me. Because Skippy said elder-level technology had been used to throw Newark farther from the star, and the dead AI was presumably an elder device. There had been speculation among the crew that the AI the scavenger team of Kristang found on Newark had been involved in committing genocide.
At the time, Skippy had been adamant that no Elder AI could have harmed an innocent species. Now he was admitting he had been completely wrong? Are you... Of course you're sure about it. Damn, Skippy. I am sorry. The little beer can had to be feeling completely miserable. As far as he knew, he was the only remaining one of his kind. He was alone. And now he learned a fellow Elder AI did something utterly unthinkable. Not as sorry as I am, Joe. The reason I asked you to meet me here is I need you to do something for me. Sure, anything. What is it? Get out, close the hatch behind you, and eject this pod. What? All I could think of was he needed to be away from the mass of the ship so he could better detect the ripples his mini-energy virus was creating. I am a potential threat, Joe. I now know an Elder AI is capable of committing an act so monstrous I can hardly speak about it. Remember when I said whoever threw Newark out of orbit needs to get paid back big time? Now I am sad to say the guilty party is one of my own, Joe. An AI like me, with a base matrix similar to my own. If that AI could do such a terrible thing, then I am also capable of the same thing. I am a threat, Joe. I need to remove myself from the ship before I lose control of myself and do something I would be ashamed of. Skippy, I what? My brain locked up. Panicked. Look, we're in the middle of nowhere, orbiting a totally anonymous gas giant planet. We can't just leave you out here. That is a good point, Joe. If I am floating in space, I could send out signals to lure in other ships and potentially do something unspeakable. No. You need to drop me into this gas giant planet, or even better, the local star. Red dwarves last a long, long time, so the closest star would be perfect to keep me locked away for the foreseeable future. That way I could never get out to threaten the galaxy. Skippy, you're missing the point. No way am I going to drop you off anywhere. You're worried that someday, maybe a long time in the future, you might become a threat. Right now you are Earth's only defense against all threats. We need you. Joe! The Avatar shook its fists in frustration. You are only thinking about humanity. I am a danger to all intelligent species in the galaxy. You need to look beyond your petty little concerns and think about the wider galaxy. Or, no, I do not. I am not responsible for the entire freaking galaxy, Skippy. Saving my home planet is enough. You disappoint me, Joe. Many times you have offered to sacrifice yourself for the greater good, but when I make a noble gesture, you... You're not making a noble gesture, you're making a premature, stupid gesture. I am trying to safeguard the galaxy, Joe, while all you can think about is one planet full of ignorant monkeys. The galaxy is a dumpster fire, Skippy. The species in charge have been tearing each other apart and making life generally miserable for everyone for longer than anyone can remember. Humanity has been lucky to be the only species not caught up in an endless war that rips societies apart and forces everyone to devote most of their resources to defense. You say the Max Hulk started it? Well, fuck them. And fuck the Rindaloo for being too lazy to stop this never-ending cycle of misery. One rogue AI isn't going to noticeably make things worse for the average person in the Milky Way, because life out there is already pretty awful. I didn't start this war, I don't want to fight it, and I sure as hell am not responsible for the safety of other species. I am a soldier in the U.S. Army, and the mission I was assigned was to ensure the safety of Earth, period. That's enough, damn it. Okay. Okay, Joe, I get your point. Please understand that if I am a potential threat to one species, I am a threat to everyone. Yeah, there's that word again. Potential. You could become a threat. You are an asset right now. Listen, Skippy, you are an irascible, arrogant asshole, but you are a good person. I know that because you are my friend, my best friend. Listen, I cut him off as his avatar raised a hand to protest. The AI who attacked Newark maybe went crazy or something. You were buried in the dirt on Paradise for a very long time, and you think you were alone even before that. Maybe the same thing happened to that other AI. I snapped my fingers. Maybe this collective thing that used to connect AIs got taken offline, and the isolation drove that other AI insane. Nagatha told me that you suspect you were not originally sentient, right? Well, technically, the word is sapient, but we've been using the term sentient all along, so go ahead. Yes, Joe, Based on changes in my matrix over time, I believe there is a strong possibility that me being fully self-aware is a fairly recent event, like within the past 5 or 10 million years. I sat back against the hatch frame, absorbing the idea that Skippy was a being who considered 5 million years to be recent. Okay, so maybe what happened was the AI on Newark also became self-aware on its own and something went wrong, so it became crazy. Hey, another thought hit me. You said the Elders designed that worm to protect the galaxy from AIs who went rogue. That AI is dead, so the safeguard worked. If it worked, it was too late to save the inhabitants of Newark, Skippy grimaced bitterly. Joe, if you are trying to assure me that the Elders will step in to prevent me from harming anyone, you are wrong, and that is what truly frightens me. I defeated the worm, remember? Not just recently. The ancient antibody subroutines inside me are proof that I survived a worm attack before I crashed on Paradise. Maybe I did something horrible a long time ago and the worm tried to stop me, but somehow I survived. After I destroyed the worm this last time, I upgraded my antibodies. Joe, I am now immune to the worm, or any technology like it. There are no longer any safeguards to prevent me from causing truly unimaginable havoc. Tell me, do you feel like doing anything evil? No. Then that's your safeguard, Skippy. You. You being yourself. That is a rather thin layer of protection. Joe, you understand that if the Maxalks are not safe from me, humanity is certainly not safe from me. What I know for certain is humanity isn't safe without you, Skippy the Magnificent. How about this? You used to talk with Nagatha all the time, right?
More than I like, yes, he groaned, although Nagatha had told me that Skippy was the one who just could not ever shut up.
Great. Then after you revive her, if she notices something different about you, the way you talk, or the way you're acting, or your thought patterns, or whatever, she will warn you, and warn me. There are plenty of stars in the galaxy for us to dump you into, Skippy. That is a comforting thought, Joe. All right. He sounded deflated. You are taking a huge risk with the entire galaxy, you know, he added in a scolding tone. I can live with it. I've been taking huge risks with the galaxy ever since I let a beer can in a dusty warehouse talk me into a lunatic scheme to shut off the wormhole near Earth. And I did pretty well with that. The jury's still out on that one, Joe. Earth is still not safe in the long term. Yeah, well, I'm beginning to think Earth won't really be safe until everyone in the galaxy is safe, but right now I have enough on my plate dealing with this little bioweapon scheme of the Kristang. In the long run, you are likely correct, Joe. Earth will not truly be safe while this endless war continues. As Chotek has stated, you monkeys need a long-term plan, instead of us racing around putting out fires. I'll get right on that, Skippy. I rolled my eyes, happy that our conversation was returning to our normal irritating back and forth. How about you promise me you won't commit suicide until, like, after lunch, and we'll talk then? I am not fully persuaded, but... Oh, very well. I suppose we should keep this discussion away from Chotek. You got that right, I agreed quickly. Hans Chotek would throw a supernova of a hissy fit if he learned an AI like Skippy had wiped out the inhabitants of Newark. And he would throw a galaxy-sized hissy fit if he learned I knew about it and didn't tell him. Although, crap, maybe I should tell Chotek about this. Ah, what the hell, I could always tell him later. If there was a later. Lunch was good, provided by the Chinese team, although I confess I don't remember what I ate, and didn't pay much attention while I was eating. My thoughts were occupied by a debate over whether to rush through lunch in case Skippy had decided to do something rash, or linger over lunch long as possible to give the beer can time to think. After a second glass of iced tea and forced small talk with people I was barely paying attention to, I excused myself and fairly jogged forward to Skippy's man cave. This was a conversation I wanted to have face-to-face, or face-to-avatar. Hey, I see you're still here, I announced as I squeezed into the escape pod. What the hell? If Skippy still wanted to kill himself to protect the galaxy, he couldn't eject with me blocking the hatchway. Still here, yes. Joe, I've been thinking, and I am still quite concerned about the risk I pose to sentient beings across the galaxy. I've been thinking too, Skippy. Do you want to guess my thoughts? You just came from the galley, so you're thinking something like, "Wish I had a beer right now." Crap, I had been thinking that.
That too, yeah.
You are ate up with worry about your responsibility to the galaxy, right?
Yes, Joe.
Although my memories are incomplete, I believe the Elders put me here to protect the inhabitants of the Milky Way.
Great. Then let's do that.
I'm not following you, Joe.
Do what you were built to do.
Protect us. There was a whole lot of bad shit going on in the galaxy after the Elders left and before the Rindaloo developed spaceflight. We thought there must be an unknown third party out there. But now it's possible all those Elder sites that got blown up were the work of rogue AIs, right?
Oh, crap. Damn it, I hadn't thought of that. That is a truly frightening thought, but
yes, you may be right about that.
Elder sites were blown up or missing entirely. An entire moon was vaporized. Plus something destroyed a sentinel in the Roach Motel. I don't think one rogue AI did that all by itself.
Agreed. That is unlikely.
Damn, Joe. If multiple AIs went rogue, that makes me even more worried that I could inevitably have that happen to me also. Maybe I should...
Crap, that was the opposite of what I wanted him to think.
Maybe you should stick around to protect us in case another rogue AI pops up.
What? Come on, Skippy, do I have to do all the thinking for you?
What?
His avatar froze in astonishment.
You? Thinking for me?
Apparently you are determined to be a total dumbass about this, so yeah. Think. If Elder AIs routinely go rogue, the galaxy needs someone capable of squashing them when they go berserk. I sure as hell can't do it, and you constantly tell me even the Rindaloo are no match for your awesomeness. That leaves you as our only defense against rogue Elder AIs.
Crap, Joe.
His avatar rubbed its chin thoughtfully.
I really had not thought of it that way.
Huh. You're right. I am the galaxy's only possible defense if another Elder AI goes crazy. Unless, you know, the crazy one is me.
Let's burn that bridge when we get to it, okay? Until you show signs of crossing over to the dark side, how about you keep on being our knight in shining armor and protect the galaxy even though the rest of the galaxy doesn't know how much they owe you? I added that last part to feed his awesomely massive ego.
A knight in shining armor. He rolled that phrase around on his tongue to get the feel of it.
I like it, Joe.
Okay, you've got a deal. As long as I'm still the Skippy the Magnificent you know and love, I will pledge myself to protecting the unworthy inhabitants of this galaxy.
Deal. And remember, if anything goes wrong, it will totally be your fault.
If anything like that goes wrong, I'm screwed anyway.
What?
I was just thinking... There's no way for your ginormous processing power to calculate the odds of you going rogue on us, is there?
No, dum-dum, I would have told you that already. Duh. There isn't enough data for me to work with.
Then I was thinking, man, this is something the Giraptha would love to bet on.
Except if they bet wrong, they probably would not live to collect, he chuckled.
That wouldn't stop those beetles from taking the action anyway.
Chapter 27
I didn't have much to do while we slowly took on fuel, so I had too much time to be stuck in my stupid head. Yeah, I was trying to think of a better way to find a single stealthed Krestang ship in the vast distances of a star system, but my mind kept getting dragged back to other things, like mostly Shauna. Specifically, Shauna and Cornpone. I should call him Jesse, I guess. Old habits are hard to break. It had been years since I last spoke with Jesse. Or Dave, or Shauna. The last time we were at Paradise to plant the fake Elder artifacts that persuaded the Ruhar to keep that planet, I had asked Skippy to give me a view of people I had known there. No, I was not doing anything creepy. I just wanted to see and hear them when they were using the video feature of their Z-phones. It had been heartbreaking to see people I considered my friends, even Perkins, and hear their fears of being trapped on Paradise forever. Their fears that the population of Earth might be enslaved. Or extinct. So, that was my distracted and depressed mindset when I came around a corner of the passageway and I saw Count Freakin' Chocula standing in the open doorway of a cabin. It wasn't his cabin. His was forward on the opposite side of the bridge/CIC complex from my own cabin. This cabin was aft near the cargo bays our science team used as workspaces. What was Hans Chotek doing? He was leaning forward into the cabin, and a woman from the science team was leaning outward.
and they were smooching. Smooch is a nice neutral term for whatever ballet their tongues were doing in each other's mouths. I stopped dead in my tracks. Chotek saw me, and instead of being shocked and embarrassed like I would have been, he merely nodded and touched Dr. Reinfall's cheek. She had a guilty look, but there was a twinkle in her eye. "Colonel Bishop," Chotek acknowledged me in a matter-of-fact manner, and right there I understood why he was not embarrassed by my presence. To him, I was like one of the servants in the house where he grew up. Hans Chotek had been raised to be accustomed to having maids, nannies, cooks, and maybe even butlers around, and to him they were almost invisible, like part of the furniture. I guess that is the aloof attitude you need to have if staff are living in your house. But it irritated me. Not knowing what else to do, I said, "Mr. Chotek," and resumed walking purposefully forward as if I had an important task and could not waste time on small talk. As I passed the still-open cabin door, I saw Dr. Reinfall was wearing a long shirt, and if she had anything on under the shirt, I couldn't see it. With my cheeks burning red, I took the first turn I came to and slapped the access panel to walk into a dimly lit cargo bay that was half empty. "Skippy. Hey, Joe, what's up? If you plan to take inventory in there, don't bother. Major Sims and my bots did it yesterday." "No, I do not want to count socks, sir." I waved a hand angrily at the crates. "Whatever." "Why didn't you warn me about Count Smoochula?"
"Count Smoochula?" he laughed. "Oh, that's a good one. I get it. Because he was checking Dr. Reinfall's tonsils with his..."
I don't need to..."
"That wasn't all they have been doing. I didn't watch or listen because of that stupid privacy thing you told me about," he grumbled. "Man, what a pain in the ass your monkey culture can be sometimes. I'll tell you what, though. Those two have been getting up to some serious gymnastics in there. They bounced around enough that the ship had to make a minor course correction. I mean, sure, those two don't compare to the way Adams was..."
"Skippy, I do not need details. Don't want details. I need to not hear details. Got it? That privacy thing, as you called it, is absolutely vital to crew morale aboard this ship. We've been stuck in this tin can together for way too long."
"You forget about the time on Gingerbread, Joe. People had plenty of opportunity for shore leave then."
"That's not the point, Skippy. You should have warned me what I would see when I came around that corner.
To be fair, Joe, I did not know Smoochula would open the door at that exact moment. I would have known if you allowed me to use a camera in people's cabins, but no, monkeys need privacy when they are mating. Jeez, it's not like your species does anything worth watching."
"That is also not the point. Also, don't ever use the word mating again."
Okay, this was an accident. He opened the door at the wrong time. Crap. What were the odds I would be in that exact spot the one time Chocula visited Reinfall's cabin? Do not give me any details. But how long have those two been, together?
Since about, shortly after Chotek returned to the ship after our black operation on Kobamic.
OMG, they have been getting it on that long? The whole time we were on Gingerbread, too?
Yeah, sure, except when Dr. Reinfall went aboard a dropship to inspect alien debris in the junkyard at the Roach Motel.
Little Hansi Smoochula was a sad little boy while she was away. He wasn't able to smooch her, Skippy giggled.
Damn, I can't believe this.
Sorry, Joe, I thought you knew about them. Everybody else does.
Before he was with Reinfall, he was with...
Don't tell me. Do not tell me.
Is there a problem? Chotek is the overall mission commander, but he is not military, and neither is Dr. Reinfall. Before her, Lieutenant...
I said don't tell me.
Crap. You're right, Chotek is a civilian.
He was a civilian, and I was stuck with Army Regulation 600-20, paragraph 4-14. No, wait, that's the old one. The new one is... Oh, hell, it didn't matter. Damn, two women? Three, Joe. Well, four, if you count that one time...
Ah! Four? Smoochula is a handsome and charming guy, Joe. He kinda has to be charming to do his job, you know. I guess women can't get enough of his delicious, chocolatey goodness. He is popular with the ladies. Well, four of them, anyway. A couple other ladies have flirted and dropped hints.
Oh, this sucks.
What?
That bureaucrat is bouncing between beds like a freaking pinball, and I can't get one...
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I think he and Dr. Reinfall are somewhat serious.
They both speak German. I really do not want to know how wonderful his life is right now, okay?
What's wrong?
For a change, his voice did not have the usual snarky tone.
You sound really down.
This is not something I want to talk about with a beer can. There was a pause. When he spoke, he sounded hurt.
Joe, you are my best friend. We should be able to talk about anything.
Crap. I had hurt his little asshole feelings. I sat down with my back against a crate. You're my best friend too, Skippy. It's just... Look, Cornpone, Jesse, he was kind of my best friend. I even visited him and his folks on leave one time. I read the report about the Mavericks, including the part that Jesse wants to propose to her.
Joe, that part was not specifically in the flight recorder data, mission logs, or Colonel Perkins's reports. I filled in from the source data.
Yeah, I know. You did a good job there. I'm happy for him, I really am. It's not easy, you know. I liked Shauna. I really liked her. She's smart and brave and a good soldier.
She did blow up an island, Joe, he chuckled.
Yeah, see? She's perfect. We couldn't make it work because duty sent us in different directions. I wonder...
That's stupid to think what if.
It's not stupid, Joe. You have to acknowledge your feelings before you can deal with them in a constructive way, to move forward.
Yeah, I know. What?
Where did you pick up the psychobabble?
I've been researching psychology, group dynamics, all that. Figured I should learn about that crap since I'm stuck with a bunch of filthy monkeys.
Oh. Well, I appreciate the effort.
It has been awesome, Joe. He gushed with enthusiasm. Knowing the psychology of monkeys allows me to maintain warm and close personal relationships without having to waste any of my precious time when some whiny loser wants to complain about how sad and lonely and homesick he is.
He said that last in a mockingly whiny tone. Truly, it has been a blessing. Instead of replying, I closed my eyes and bonked my head against the crate behind me over and over.
Joe, what's wrong?
Huh. Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Is this because Smoochula is getting laid and you're not?
Let me check what my interpersonal relationship guide recommends in this situation.
That would be fantastic, Skippy. Super helpful. Put it in a PowerPoint slide, please.
As we wrapped up the slow and dangerous yet ultimately successful refueling operation, Adams dragged me to another of her yoga, aerobics, martial arts classes in the gym. I swear she just makes shit up to hurt me. When the class was over, the spec ops men and women went over to treadmills or weight benches because to them, the hour in the class was just an easy warm-up. I was soaking with sweat, and one of my shoulders ached.
Are you okay, sir?
Adams asked with concern as I grimaced, moving my sore shoulder in a gentle arc.
That's that same shoulder that's been bothering me. I made a dismissive wave with my other arm.
It'll be fine.
She cocked a head at me.
You should get that looked at. I'll go to the medical bay with you. My left ankle feels like something popped when I landed that last time.
She held that foot off the deck and rotated her ankle in circles.
I'm used to aches and pains. Army medics think there isn't anything that can't be cured with a big glass of water and 800 milligrams of Motrin.
She laughed.
I thought that only applied to the Marine Corps.
My shoulder really did hurt, but it was a dull ache rather than a sharp pain. As we walked out of the gym, I threw a towel over my shoulders.
And we're not as young as we used to be, I observed, something I never pictured myself saying.
She patted my good shoulder.
It's not the years, it's the mileage. We've been through a lot together, sir.
Adams, sometimes I wish you wouldn't call me sir all the time.
I will when you take off those shiny silver eagles.
She looked me in the eyes.
Sir.
I sighed, knowing she was right. The passageway split, the medical bay to the left and my cabin straight ahead.
Let me stop by my cabin to get a fresh shirt if Mad Dr. Skippy is going to look at my shoulder.
Hey, Joe, Skippy interrupted. You are, going to your cabin right now?
Yep.
I paused at the door to my cabin.
Then you need to look at my shoulder.
Sure thing. No problem. Why don't you go straight to medical? No need to change your shirt, no siree, no need for you to go in that cabin right now.
Ah, shit.
I knew what it meant when that beer can said, heh heh.
What the hell did you do?
Oh, nothing. Okay, not nothing. Well, nothing important. Damn it, this was supposed to be a surprise. Hey, Sergeant Adams, shouldn't you go to your own cabin first?
Not a chance of that now, beer can, Adams declared with a twinkle in her eyes.
Open this damn door right now.
I wouldn't recommend that for your delicate sensibilities, Margaret, Skippy pleaded.
Delicate? Now I have to know what this surprise is.
And me too, I agreed.
Open the door, Skippy.
Okay, but don't say I didn't warn you, he sniffed with annoyance. This was supposed to be a surprise just for you, Joe.
The door slid open. Adams and I shrieked and jumped back. No, Adams shrieked. I made a manly sound like...
Okay, I shrieked like a little girl, too. You would have done the same thing.
Laying on my bed was a woman. A naked woman. No, it wasn't a woman, my slow brain realized in a flash, because I knew all of the few women aboard the ship. The person laying on my bunk, her chest thrust out and her legs spread, was not a woman. Although she was anatomically correct, which is all I will say about that subject.
Hello, Joey, she said in a sultry voice. Come in. We can have fun.
Gah! I shrieked, and Adams and I instinctively held on to each other. Then we pulled away, as we both knew what a painfully awkward moment that was. You gave me a sex bot?
Yes. Or no, if a sex bot is a bad thing. Kinda guessing what you want me to say, Joe.
Well, it's not a good thing, damn it.
Oh, got it.
No, that is not a sex bot. Of course not. She is a... What the hell should I call this? An intimate companion. Is that better?
Joey,
the sex bot pouted with a painted fingernail in her mouth.
Don't keep me waiting, you bad boy.
And it talks? Well, that's not all she does, Joe. She is fully functional, if you know what I mean.
Fully? Oh, God.
What else does she...
It...
My brain locked up as the sex bot moved its hips in a circle and I couldn't look away. Can you make it stop doing that? The bot stopped moving suggestively, but then it stood up and walked into the open doorway, its hips and other things swaying with every step.
She can do all the other things women do in bed, Skippy explained. You know, like pretending to be interested while you talk blah 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 endlessly about yourself, or like faking that you were a good lover. Although with you, sheesh, that's going to take an Oscar-worthy performance. You'll need to grade her on a curve until she learns. And speaking of learning, I programmed her with a wide variety of really weird stuff based on your browser history. So, oh, this can't be happening. I hope I got that part right. I mean, with some of those search terms you used, I had no idea what you wanted. And maybe you can help me. What does tiny, you should not be snooping at my browser history? Huh, you got that right. I feel like I needed a shower after reading. Damn it, Skippy. I did not ask for a sex bot.
You kinda did, Joe. All that moping around you did when you found out Count Smoochula and just about every other guy aboard the ship are getting serious tail, and then, I am moping for a real woman, you idiot. This thing is not real, Skippy. Oh, for crying out loud. Damn it, Joe, it's not like you can afford to be picky. Can't you close your eyes and pretend you're with someone else? That technique works great for the women unfortunate enough to be in bed with you, so you could... I am not closing my eyes with her. It. I am not touching that thing. Come on, Joe. You can't deny you have had a record-breaking dry spell. Dr. Skippy recommends you get some exercise, and I don't mean in the gym. Unless you want to do it in the gym, I guess I could... Skippy, you are a beer can, so you don't understand these things. I want a real woman. I want to have a relationship.
Relationship? Skippy scoffed.
Joe, right now your only relationship, he made a gagging sound, is with the shower in your cabin.
I don't... Damn, Skippy said under his breath.
Jeez, in some cultures, you and that shower would be considered married by now.
Skip, seriously, I am surprised that shower's father hasn't come after you with a shotgun for sullying his daughter's honor.
Skip, dude, you've got blisters.
I don't...
And you are getting super cranky. You need to get laid soon, or I am afraid you will explode. How about...
Skippy!
I looked to Adams for help, but she was leaning against the bulkhead, one hand over her eyes, tears of laughter rolling down her cheeks, her shoulders shaking. And damn it, she wasn't the only person who saw the naked sex bot stretched languidly in the doorframe, and heard what Skippy said. They must have heard the commotion and came around the corner from the CIC. Half of them were laughing, hands over their faces, unable to look at me. The other half were staring in shock at the sex bot as it wiggled its hips slowly.
"Yeah, all right, people, move along," I ordered through gritted teeth. "Nothing to see here."
Skippy was playing a joke on me.
"Oh, it's no joke, Joe." Skippy's voice was again perky. "Anastasia is fully functional. Certainly more than you could..."
"You named it?"
"Her, Joe. I named her. Where are your manners? You don't want to hurt her feelings, do you? Anastasia was the name of that girl you lusted after in high school. Although..." His voice dropped to a conspiratorial whisper. "That pretty much applied to all the girls in your high school, so I could have picked any."
Lieutenant Williams of our SEALs team looked like he had seen a ghost. Or a demon.
"Sir? Colonel Bishop, have you been keeping a...
He had trouble even saying it.
"A blow-up doll in your cabin?"
"No, I..." "Oh, crap. Adams, please, kill me now. I don't..." She still could barely speak. "Don't have a sidearm with me, sir."
"Williams," I forced myself to look straight at him. "I didn't ask for this thing. It was Skippy's idea."
Just then, my day got even more super awesomely wonderful when Count Smoochula came around the corner to see what was going on. He took one look at what he assumed was a naked girl in the doorway to my cabin, blinked hard in surprise, then looked at the sex bot again, realizing that is what Anastasia had to be. I could see the gears in his head spinning.
"Colonel, I presume you have an explanation for that," he gestured toward Anastasia.
"Damn it, now I was thinking of that thing as a person. Skippy, please, put that thing back in my cabin."
"You don't like her, Joe? I'm kind of hurt."
"In the cabin now."
"Okay, okay, don't get your panties bunched up," he muttered as Anastasia backed into my cabin and the door slid closed.
"Darn it, I spent a lot of time and used up a lot of resources to build that bot, Joe. It would be a tremendous waste to throw her away. If you don't want to bang her, I'll need to repurpose her for something." "I do not want to bang her."
"Repurpose?" Chotek did not like the sound of that.
"To do what?"
"I don't know yet." Skippy was peeved. "She can't do any heavy maintenance work, and she isn't built for working in vacuum or in hard radiation environments. Which maybe she can do easy tasks like changing filters and transporting stuff like laundry."
"She would be touching my clothes?" Chotek's lips pulled back in disgust.
"Colonel Bishop has not... how do I say this delicately? Used that bot yet?"
"No," I protested.
"Well, Joe hasn't been with her that you know of, Mr. Chotek."
"Don't worry," the asshole beer can giggled. "Those stains will wash right out. Probably. I hope. Damn, that stuff is sticky."
Chotek shot me a look with a raised eyebrow, and I seriously wanted to kill myself right there.
"Sir, I..." "I what?" I had no idea what to say. This was a complete surprise to me. I just found out about it.
"Very well."
Count Chocula's shocked expression had been replaced by an amused smirk directed at me. "I am sure you can handle this situation more discreetly in the future."
"Yes," I mumbled.
And then it hit me that a naked sex bot was still in my cabin, and the people standing around were waiting to see what I would do. So I sure as hell could not go in my cabin.
"Adams, if anyone needs me, I'll be taking a long walk out an airlock." I turned and began walking toward the nose of the ship. "I won't need a spacesuit."
Chapter 28. On the second-to-last mission to refuel the Flying Dutchman's depleted tanks, I went along in one of the Condors. Yes, during the time we spent a year flying around the junkyard in the Roach Motel, I had qualified to fly our largest model of dropship, a craft big enough to be considered a small ship like a corvette in some space navies. No, I was not acting as a pilot on this mission because I still was about the least skilled pilot aboard the Flying Dutchman, and I had no experience flying in the thick atmosphere of a gas giant planet. Because our entire mini-fleet of dropships had gotten continuous use in the junkyard, we had to designate one of each model as a hangar queen to be stripped of parts to keep others flying. Even then, we were taking used parts of one dropship to replace the totally worn-out parts of our flight-worthy dropships. That is why we were not taking our Condors as deep as the first time we refueled, We were concerned there had been too much wear and tear on vital components. We very carefully inspected all the vital components before each flight. So, of course, it was a tiny little part we barely thought of that bit us in the ass. More about that later. I was not acting as a pilot, and I was also not annoying the flight crew by sightseeing, because I was part of the drogue control crew. The first time we tried Skippy's crazy plan to extract fuel from the atmosphere of a gas giant, we learned someone needed to manually fly the big fuel collection parachute thingy that was strung between and behind the pair of condors. Sammy Reed had done that by herself the first time, and the intense concentration needed had exhausted her. On subsequent missions, each ship had two pilots, a relief pilot, and three people to control the drogue parachute. That was more people's lives being put at risk, but lower overall risk, according to our experienced and very cautious lead pilot, Major Desai. She had flown the first mission on this refueling op and proclaimed it was doable. She liked the fact that we would not be flying as deep in the atmosphere this time. My participation in the op was so I could appreciate how difficult it was, so another pilot could get rest while I took the responsibility, and because I very much wanted to get off the ship for a while. Anastasia the sex bot was out of my cabin and back to wherever Skippy had created her. It created it. Damn it, now the beer can had me thinking of that bot as a person. You would understand if you had seen her. She looked disturbingly realistic, so much that if I hadn't seen her aboard, it, if I hadn't seen it, I'll forget it. Anyway, it was a good idea for me to get off the ship for a while. Every time people saw me, they couldn't help laughing, and that was hurting productivity. Yeah, that's the reason I had to get off the ship. I was concerned about the crew not being able to concentrate on work and training. Also, I spent a lot of time hiding in my office or cabin to avoid people. Adams could not even look at me. It got to the point where she was eating at odd times in the galley to avoid running into me. And Skippy? That little shithead was fine. Never better. He still thought he had done a big favor for me, and he hinted he wanted an apology for me rejecting a wonderful gift. The last star in the universe is going to be a cold, dark cinder before he gets an apology from me. We had reached target depth, about 80,000 feet deeper than the first mission of this refueling op had flown. Those ships had reported bad and unpredictable turbulence and had been forced to cut their flights short due to stress on the pilots. I had wholeheartedly agreed with their decision to come back early with their tanks less than 70% full. The last thing I needed was pilots pushing themselves too far because of some macho bullshit. The good news about being 80,000 feet deeper in the thick, toxic atmosphere was the collection apparatus would siphon fuel faster and cut our flight duration by an estimated 40 minutes. The bad news was the air outside the ships created a lot more resistance, so we had to run the engines hotter to compensate. We also had another 80,000 feet to climb on our return flight. And, you know, we were that much closer to the depth at which the atmospheric pressure would crush our ships. Good times. We leveled off and spent 20 minutes verifying every system was working perfectly and that the turbulence was manageable. The air was smoother than the previous flight encountered, but we still hit vicious updrafts and downdrafts that came out of nowhere. Skippy didn't have enough data about this planet to make an accurate model of the air circulation patterns. The pilots of both ships conferred and agreed they were confident in the delicate operation of deploying the drogue chute, so we got started. Strung between both ships was a thin cable we had hooked up in orbit. The cable had enough slack and stretching ability that the ships could fly in a loose formation. If that lead cable snapped, we would have to climb back into orbit to attach another. There was no way to do that while the pair of condors were bouncing around in the atmosphere. The other condor started the process of deploying the drogue chute, and when the thing was about three-quarters unrolled from its reel, disaster struck. We hit an updraft, which was not a problem by itself, but at the same time we got a visit from the screw-up ferry. The hatch from which the chute deployed was on the port side of the condor, and it was a crappy design by the Theranin. Instead of the door retracting in the hull, it popped out slightly and slid forward. This feature demonstrated that big condors were designed as spacecraft first, with considerations for flying in atmospheres second. This would not be a problem, except we had used that hatch a lot to deploy safety lines and reel in stuff we wanted from the junkyard. The cables and reels had been inspected, along with the sliding door mechanism, but neither humans nor Skippy's bots took the mechanism completely apart to check on the pin that held the door when it was retracted. That jolt from turbulence was enough to make the worn-out pins snap. The airstream howling past caught the door, and it slid back to slam shut. Or it tried to, because the folded drogue was in the way. The violent impact of the door crushed the tough nanofiber strands of the drogue, and for a couple seconds, the spool kept feeding out the folded drogue inside the bay behind the partly closed door. Then the door, which had slipped off its tracks and gotten bent, broke away. 13 meters of drogue got pulled out all at once, pulled hard because the crushed part of the chute was no longer folded and the air yanked on it. The Condor yawed and rolled to port, out of control. Skippy's homemade fuel collection drogue was designed to break away at both ends if stress on the drogue got too strong. The end attached to my Condor separated as designed to protect us. Unfortunately, the breakaway part on the other Condor's end was still wrapped around the reel, so the reel tore loose, and because it didn't fit through the hatchway, it took part of the hull with it. No longer having a rapidly unfolding parachute pulling it to port made the Condor snap abruptly to the right, putting the port side engine intake directly into the chaotic path of the flailing drogue. Part of the drogue got sucked into the intake, wrapped itself around the turbine blades, and jerked the solid reel with it. Before the heavy reel shattered the turbine blades and destroyed that engine, the drogue whipped over and around the hull, the unraveling end being pulled into the starboard engine. The portside engine had zero chance to survive even before the reel came crashing into it at supersonic speed. But the starboard engine was lucky. Either the screw-up ferry missed a golden opportunity, or she wanted to prolong her mischief, because the portside engine survived long enough for its rotating blades to pull back on the drogue. The end that had whipped over the top of the fuselage was already playing havoc with turbine blades on the starboard side, so the lucky part was the drogue was tugged in two directions and tore apart, with the break happening on the starboard side. Only 6 meters of drogue was ingested by the starboard engine, snapping off or bending less than 20% of those turbine blades. That Condor began dropping, unable to maintain altitude on one damaged engine.
What the? I shut up because answering questions from me would distract the pilots from what they needed to be doing, flying the aircraft. There was one being who boasted a near infinite capacity to multitask, so I called that asshole beer can. Skippy, what is... Instead of the familiar arrogant tone of Skippy, the not quite as awesome as he thinks he is, there was a scratchy recording of a bland female voice.
Your call is important to us. Please hold and we will answer your call in the order it was received. Thank you for your patience.
I stared at my Z-phone in disbelief.
What the f...
Skippy! Answer me right now, damn it! Busy, Joe. Super-duper busy. He actually sounded distracted. You were never too busy to bug the shit out of me when you want to talk. Sing it if you want to, but I need a sit rep right now.
Sing it?
Ooh, that is a great... No, it is a terrible idea. What the hell is going on? Fine. It is a fluid situation, Joe. More data is coming in every nanosecond. If you can wait, bad news is not like wine. It does not get better with age.
That is a good point. Okay, Lieutenant Reed's Condor has suffered the loss of one engine, and the other is badly damaged. It is losing altitude.
It took 20 minutes before we had enough info to fully understand the situation, and for Lieutenant Reed to get enough control of a ship that she could talk to us.
Engine 2 is gone. It shredded and tore loose, damaged the tail cone as it went. There is damage to the port side hull. We've lost sensors to see how bad it is. We can tell parts of the outer skin are peeling away.
She took a pause for breath, and when she spoke, her voice was dead calm, relaying purely the facts with no hint of her inner emotions.
Engine 1 is running at 40% power. We tried higher power settings, but the vibration caused the engine controller to throttle back.
Understood, Fireball. I used her call sign, unaware that she was not fond of that pilot nickname. We show you descending at 200 meters per second. Can you confirm? It was a stupid question, but I had to confirm the data link was accurate.
Confirmed.
This time, there was a catch in her voice.
We can't lighten the load. There's nothing to dump overboard. As we get deeper in the atmosphere, I will need to reduce airspeed to reduce stress on the hull. That will increase our sink rate.
Understood. Shit, that time my voice nearly cracked.
Colonel, she asked.
Yes?
This would be a really good time for a monkey-brained idea.
Lieutenant Samantha Sammy Reed was spot on that only a crazy idea could rescue her ship and crew. Her Condor was sinking so fast, there was no time for a rescue attempt from the Dutchman. We needed to do it with our ship, and what we had on board. I asked Porter, our lead pilot, for ideas, and he and his team came up with a couple off-the-wall suggestions that were not quite crazy enough to work. We could not attach a line to the stricken ship and winch the crew across the gap. We could not clamp onto the other Condor with ours. The landing skids had no way to attach to the smooth hull of another dropship. Porter then got excited when he remembered an incident during the Korean War and another during Vietnam, when one fighter jet pushed a damaged fighter that had lost power. In Korea, the pilot stuck his fighter's nose cone up the crippled jet's tailpipe and pushed it beyond enemy territory. In Vietnam, the pilot used the windshield of his Phantom jet to push against the tailhook of another Phantom. Those ideas were not practical for our situation, but they did get me thinking. First, Porter made me realize that plenty of humans got wild-ass ideas when they were needed, and it was time for me to stop screwing around and step up my game. Second, he reminded me that dropships had something like a tailhook. They were all equipped with some kind of mechanism that could catch on netting in a docking bay for emergency recovery. Sometimes in combat, a dropship needed to be taken aboard quickly, and there was no time for gentle and precise flying. Instead, the dropship aimed at the open docking bay and flew in, trusting suspensor fields to slow it down and catch it. In my pilot training, I had practiced that maneuver a dozen times. It was nerve-wracking to fly toward an open docking bay, seeing the back wall approaching way too fast and hoping the mysterious, invisible technology of suspensor fields will work correctly. Because it would be foolish to rely on one system to prevent a crash, suspensor fields aboard a Theranan ship had a backup. Netting stretched across the open bay door. This netting was a tough and smart nanofiber that sensed the nose of an incoming dropship and created an opening so the nose didn't crumple on impact. The rest of the netting caught the wings, engine nacelles, and most important, the hooks. Just behind the engines were hooks, either four or six of them depending on the model of dropship. These hooks deployed in a star pattern to catch the netting and bring the dropship to a halt before it damaged the mothership. A crash landing, as we called it, was something we only practiced in the simulator for a very good reason. The crash landing maneuver was rough on biological beings like humans. Supposedly, a properly strapped-in crew of a dropship would survive a crash landing, but it wasn't something we wanted people to experience unless they absolutely had to. The reason I mentioned emergency docking procedures was not for suspensor fields or nanofiber crash netting. It was for the hooks. Even one of those hooks could stop the mass of a dropship traveling up to 30 meters a second. That was a seriously strong hook. The strength of those hooks is why I traded my flight suit for a hard-shell Cristang-powered armor suit. Joe, are you sure about this? Skippy. I gave a somewhat shaky thumbs-up sign to the pilots helping me prep the suit. If I was sure about doing this, I wouldn't have asked you to recheck your numbers a half dozen times. Were you wrong? No, but that is not the point. My calculations confirm the arrestor hooks of your ships are strong enough, that the cables you are using are strong enough, and that the nose landing gear of the other Condor is strong enough. If you can get a cable attached from your hooks to the other ship's nose gear, you will be able to tow it up into orbit. Probably. Unless you run into bad turbulence, or the pilots lack the skill to... The pilots are gonna do just fine, Skippy. We'll see about that, since none of the pilots have done this before, trained for it, or even thought about it. If Captain Porter in the lead ship, or Lieutenant Reed in the trailing ship, are not able to fly very smoothly, their actions could set up a vibration in the cable that could... You told me this super-duper high-tech cable is smart. It has some sort of self-correcting thingy that can help steer it and dampen vibrations. Yes? He gave an exasperated sigh. The cable can make adjustments to a certain point. After that, it gets dicey. Anyway, you are missing the point as usual. I am not worried about the equipment or the pilot's skill. I am worried about you, dum-dum. Skippy, I waved to the pilots and closed the airlock door behind me. Thank you. It's nice to know that you care. Oh, I meant I'm worried you will screw this up and get a bunch of people killed, but let's go with the caring thing if you like. Why are you such an asshole? Hey, I wouldn't have to worry at all if you weren't such a dumb monkey. This is all your fault anyway. Me? The airlock finished cycling and I opened the outer door into the back ramp area of the Condor, hooking a safety line onto my belt. You designed and built that crappy fuel drogue, and you are a trouble magnet.
This is the first time you've been on a refueling mission, and the first time we have had a problem. Coincidence? I don't think so. Totally your fault. We should never have... Oh, damn it, Joe. His voice broke, and he was blubbering. If something bad happens to you, I don't know what I will do. Gee, Skippy. Now I was...